Genesis House, FirstNet, built with AT&T, and the Friends in Recovery podcast are proud to bring you Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast. Join your hosts,
Podfather, Jersey Ed,
and Noontime with Skylar New,
as they address the real issues of first responders' health and wellness, from physical and mental health to relationships and work-life balance. Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast, is available on Facebook, Podbean, iTunes, and YouTube, as well as iHeartRadio, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, here are your friends in recovery answering the call.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. I am the Podfather, Mike Miles, and I'm here with my partner.
Noontime with Skylar.
That's right, Skylar Noon, who's been, it's been a great, I'll tell you, I've watched a few episodes of the podcast, and since you've been on, it's been great. You bring a lot of knowledge and a lot of smiles to this podcast. We're going to miss Ed today. He's not around. Jersey Ed, he's, I don't know, he's out hunting down or helping people. He's doing something.
Probably.
Yeah, he will be missed. But everything going well with you, Sky?
Yeah, I still can't believe it's snowing up there. That's
it's snowing. I think we got about 3 inches of heavy, wet, blanketed snow, but it's 34 degrees, so it's right on the cusp there. You know, It's just crazy up in New England. You never know.
That's what I mean. It's mid-April. What the heck's going on?
One of the worst snowstorms I've ever seen was the night before Halloween many years ago. We got like 13 inches of snow, and it was below zero. It was crazy. I never saw anything like it. It was like the middle of October, but that's New England.
Yeah, geez. Interesting, for sure.
No doubt about it. So we have a guest. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to give you the phone number. Do you want me to read that?
That'd be great, sure.
So I'll give us, so if you want to reach us, we are at help@friendsinrecoverypodcast.com. You can email us there. If you want to call, it's 617-379-1163.
Great number, 1163. My badge number was 163 years ago. I still have the badge, but the number's gone. We have a guest on today. He's a friend of mine. I grew up with Tony Archinski. Grew up together in the city of Lowell. Spent our teenage years together, Tony and I and a few other people. And it was good. He was a good friend. It was good growing up in a time, very turbulent time, the 60s. And
anyway, come on now, Mike. I would have said the 70s, but okay, we'll go with the 60s.
Well, we did have fun in the 60s, though. You got to admit.
Yes, we did.
Maybe too much fun.
I can still see you walking down the street in downtown Lowell in your bell-bottom pants.
That's a great visual. I love it.
Well, I didn't have a shag haircut, which you did. So. They call those mullets today, Tony.
Yeah.
But all kidding aside, Tony spent a lot of years on a police department out here in Dracut, and he's an Army veteran. So anyway, I'm going to introduce Tony, and I'm going to let Tony give us his own bio, all right? He's pretty good at that. So.
Oh, boy. I guess we're going to jump right into it. So anyway, my name is Tony Archinski. Mike and I have been friends for over 50 years. We were kids together. I think we first hooked up in high school when we were about 15 years old. We're both in our late 60s now, so that'll give you an idea of how long we've been friends. And throughout life, sometimes we're together, sometimes we're not. But Mike has always been my best friend, and he's always been the type of friend that you can not see him for 2 years and sit down like it never, like there was no separation whatsoever. We've been close over the years. When I went in the service in 1972, in the Army, Mike followed me, right away. Can I call you Mike, or do I have to call you Podfather? So, we went in the service in, I went in 72. I think you were probably 73 or 74, Mike.
I went in the end of 72, November 72.
Right. That's right.
72.
Yes. So, you know, being the politician that I was even back then, I talked to somebody in Frankfurt, Germany. And when Mike stepped off the plane, he stepped right into my little Volkswagen. And I ended up getting him stationed at the same army base that I was at.
That's so cool.
I don't know, to this day, I don't know how you pulled that off, but you did it.
That's awesome.
All I remember is the guy in Frankfurt saying, calling you lieutenant. And I knew you were a corporal. I'm like, it's a lieutenant. He's in civilian clothes. So I just went along with it. You know, next thing you know, he's telling me, oh, you're going to Heilbronn, Germany. And Tony's winking and nodding and getting my bag. And off we go.
In the Volkswagen you go.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it actually was someone I didn't even know. I just happened to be waiting for the plane. And I started talking to him. I said, hey, is there any way I can get my buddy stationed where I am? And the guy helped me out. And that's just the way things were, you know.
That's awesome.
So I did all my time. You know, it was the Vietnam era. I was in, you know, when I went to training in basic training and then afterwards, you know, most of my class did go to Vietnam. I was spared from Vietnam because my brother Dale was in Vietnam. And in those days, they would not send two brothers to the same war zone. So I think there were only three of us that didn't go to Vietnam out of my class. You know, I grew up in a family where, you know, my father was military, my brothers were military. So, you know, when I graduated from high school, there were only two choices. You were either going to go to college or you were going to go. Well, actually, there were three choices. You went to college or you were going to go in the service or you were going to get out of the house. So I grew up in a family that had seven kids and you know, it was a very loving family. But, you know, they didn't want me there until I was in my 40s. So I decided to go into the service. When I got out of the service, I worked for an employment program. And Mike, back in those days, I think the unemployment rate right after the Vietnam War was like 10-12%. And so that was the first and the only time that I was ever unemployed in my life. And I ended up getting a job working for a federal program that actually provided jobs to people that were unemployed. And I worked there for 6 years before I became a police officer. And then I took the test, and my father was a civil servant. And, you know, the rule in our family was take every civil service test you can take. You never know what you're going to be doing 5 years from now, and maybe your name will come up. So, you know, it actually did happen. And the funny part about it was I got notified that I had a job at the post office, and I got notified that I had a job as a police officer. Both on the same day. I had two great jobs in my hand. And Mike, you probably don't remember this.
I do. I remember.
I called you and I said, Mike was already a police officer. I said, I don't know what I want to do. I mean, you know, which one is better? I didn't always want to be a police officer.
Right, right.
You know, my older brother was a police officer, but it wasn't something that I had to do. And in those days, the post office was paying pretty good money as well. So I called Mike and I said, what do you think I should do? And you said to me, well, Tony, do you want to spend the rest of your life inside of a building that has no windows? And that's what did it. I made up my mind. I wanted to be a police officer.
He hasn't changed.
And it was a good career. You know, I had, you know, there were ups and downs in it. You know, back in the day, I was drinking a little too much. I learned how to drink when I was 15 years old. And the funny part about it is, you know, looking back in retrospect, I mean, I don't even think I ever even liked drinking, but I was pretty good at it and probably too good at it. And so that led to a whole nother story that we'll get into at another time. But I'm proud to say that I've been clean and sober for 27 years. And nice. And it's all because of the guy that's smoking a cigar right over there behind the steering wheel. So let's see, where do we go from there? So I did a full career in the police department, matriculated up through the ranks, and left at a full retirement at age 55 as a lieutenant shift commander in charge of the early night shift in a town that joins Lowell, Mass., where Mike is from. And I was the union president for about 10 years. where I worked. And so when it was time to retire, the union said to me, hey, you know, why don't you come work for us? And I said, well, okay. And I've been there ever since. So I'm still currently working, and I work for a union that represents police officers and corrections officers, probation officers, anybody in the law enforcement field. So it's allowed me to kind of stay with the family. And although, you know, they're all so young now, right, Mike? I mean, you see a police cruiser go by and they're all 22 years old with shaved heads, and, you know, I can't tell one from the other. And then of course we look like old bucks to them. Right. Yeah. So,
how the tables have turned.
It's kept me busy. And I enjoy it. And, you know, it's not a lot of heavy lifting, and, you know, that's what we're looking for at our age. That's where I've been. And then I was always kind of interested in politics. I just always liked politics. So when I retired from the police department, I decided to run for the Board of Selectmen, which is sort of like a town father. Different towns call them aldermen, selectmen, councilors. And so I ran for selectman, and I've been a selectman in the town of Dragut for going on my ninth year now, the third term.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's it.
Well, no, there's more. We're not letting you off that easy, but that's good. And I think, you know, as you're speaking, I'm listening, and it just seems, how quick time goes by. It just goes by so fast, you know. But I remember, joining the Army. I don't know if you remember this. You sent me a bear stein from the Munich 1972 Olympics. I have it upstairs in my armoire. It's a huge bear stein with the gold rings on it. And the 72 Olympics is when the Palestinian terrorist ended up killing the wrestlers from Israel. They murdered them. And that was a political act of terrorism. And that stein today, it always reminds me of, number one, you sent me that from Germany. You were at the Oktoberfest. You bought it there. And it was probably one of the nicest gifts I've ever gotten from anybody. And it must have cost a few bucks back then when you bought it. But I want you to know it's in good shape. But that was so, that kind of made me want to, I don't know if you remember this, when you were stationed out in Indiana, I flew out to hang out with you for a weekend.
Sure. Yep.
We got hammered. We went to a place called the Hungry Eye. It was all you could drink and eat for $5. And we were drinking rum and Cokes and eating pizza. And I was staying in a hotel on the second floor. I ended up throwing up over the side, and I threw up on two guys, and they beat the snot out of me. They come out.
Well, you know, it's funny, Mike, because the only thing I do remember you coming out to Indianapolis to visit me. And the only thing I can remember about that whole thing was you rolling around in the parking lot beside the car. So I really have a vivid memory of that. So
I was trying to crawl under the car to get away from these two guys trying to kill me, you know? But when I got to Germany, I didn't know where I was going. You know, I when I got out of MP school, half the class went to Vietnam, the other half class stayed stateside. Kevin and I ended up getting stationed at Fort Dix, Kevin Richardson, and it was a great fit because New Jersey, beautiful state. We had a lot of fun. I'd come home every other weekend. I'd drive home. I had an old Pinto. And but when I went to Germany, I didn't know where I was going to end up. And I had just mentioned to Tony that I was coming there. And of course, we didn't have the technology we have today, phone calls or whatever. And he's at the airport waiting. The next thing you know, they tell me, you're going to Heilbronn, Germany. It was a storybook duty for me.
Yeah, I know. He started with saying how, you were a friend that's been there for him, and you can pick up where you left off. And then he tells a story how he's picked you up from the airport.
Vietnam. Old friends are Germany. Best friends, you know. When I got to Germany and he was standing there, I ended up getting on a bus. They wouldn't let me go in the car with him. So I got on a bus, and then he waited for me when he got there. And when he got back, when I arrived, he was waiting for me. I went to the MP barracks, introduced myself, and we hung out over there. We went out to eat. We drank beers. We did a lot of stuff. We did a lot of stuff over there, you know?
Yeah, we did.
But I'll tell you, it was a, I look back on it, I wouldn't change 1 minute of my teenage years and the friends we had and the things we did. I look at policing today. I know we got to take a break in a second, but when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about policing today. And you're still involved, Tony. I mean, I've been out 6 years. You've been out 9, I think.
I've been out 12, actually.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so, but you are involved, very much involved with the unions, mm-hmm. all different departments, corrections, because this show is about corrections as well. And there's so much stress and addiction and depression and anxiety and suicide. I mean, Christ almighty, these jobs create a lot of havoc on families. But we still want to take them and we do them. So when we come back, we're going to talk about your position in the union and your opinions and feelings on what's going on in policing. So this is Answering the Call, the First Responders Podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. This is the Podfather. I'll be right back.
You're first. First to respond. First to put others' lives before your own. And in an emergency, you need a network that puts you first, that connects you to technology, to each other, and to other agencies. Built with and for first responders. FirstNet, the only congressionally authorized wireless network for first responders. Because putting you first is our job.
Since 1992, Genesis House has been helping real people heal from addiction on their private recovery campus in beautiful Palm Beach County, Florida. Their family-owned program is accredited by the Joint Commission and offers detox and dual diagnosis treatment in a comfortable and confidential setting. At Genesis House, they focus on treating the underlying causes of addiction. Their comprehensive approach includes psychiatric care, individual and small group therapy, trauma healing techniques, and holistic care including yoga, massage, and animal-assisted therapy. After treatment, their clients enjoy the lifelong support of a nationwide network of Genesis House alumni. Call Genesis House today at 1-800-737-0933 to speak with someone who understands. Visit them on the web at www.genesishouse.net. It's time to start your journey to a long and successful recovery.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Friends in Recovery Podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. I am the Podfather, Mike Miles, and I'm here with my good friend, retired Lieutenant Tony Archinski, and
Noontime with Skylar.
Noontime with Skylar. Skylar, you've been awfully quiet. I'm just, I feel like I'm dominating this.
And no, and I'm loving watching you guys' friendship. I think that that's great. And, you know, like that's I think all I would want in a friend is someone saying that we can pick up right where we left off and someone that's going to pick me up when I arrive in a different country. You know, like that's a friendship right there. You know, like you can't replace that.
No, and you can't forget something like that, you know.
Yes.
It'd be so remiss, you know, to take advantage, or to look at something like that and think it didn't mean a lot, because here you are, 20 years old, stepping off a plane in a country you've never been to. And, you know, I'll tell you, that night in Frankfurt, I had to stay one night while they processed all my paperwork, was one of the loneliest, strangest nights I've ever experienced in my life. It seemed like it lasted a month. It was one night, you know. But yeah, arriving in Heilbronn, Germany, which was next to Stuttgart, was a gorgeous. Tony, wasn't it beautiful over there?
Sure. Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah.
We were in a wine region, Skylar, where there was grapevines growing on hills like that went basically straight up these tractors. I was wondering how they didn't flip over. And I saw rabbits the size of German shepherds over there. They were huge.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. And these big, big rabbits. I don't even know the names of them, but yeah, we had a great time. I, you know, the only thing I wish I had a camera back then. I didn't have a camera. I think I might have had like a cheap camera. I took a few pictures, but if I'd ever had a cell phone with all the abilities and
No kidding. I feel the same way, Mike. It's changed in all those years. I mean, if you stop and think about it, you know, I don't want to give away how old we are, but you would write a letter home, and it would take 3 weeks to get there. Yep. Right. And they would answer it, and it would take 3 weeks to come back.
To get
so
it back, right?
Imagine that. Now you press a button, and they get it anywhere there in the world in a second, you know?
And I remember going to the German post office, and the woman would be speaking fluent German, and then she'd switch to English. And once a month, I'd call home to just talk to my mom and my dad. And, you know, ein Moment bitte, and then she'd say, okay. And then we'd talk, and it was like a 3-second delay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think you even, I think when you were finished saying a sentence, I think you had to say over.
Yes.
So
right.
That, exactly. So that they knew.
Oh, wow.
So it was called like one directional. It was not bi-directional. So you would speak, it would get to the other end, then you'd say over, and then they would speak and it would come your way.
Wow. Well, and now think about our sponsors, FirstNet. That's crazy. Think about that.
Right. FirstNet.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, FirstNet, they have a couple commercials out now, and I watch them, and I'm just proud that, you know, they found us, and believe me, we would have found them eventually, but it's amazing to even have a company like AT&T and FirstNet even interested. And so whatever we can do for anybody out there listening to this podcast, watching this podcast, police, fire, corrections, EMS, veterans, you know, Skylar has a number, Cop Line, I believe.
Yes, it is copline.org and or 800 Cop Line, which is 800-267-5463.
Yeah, and Tony, we had Stephanie Samuels on a short time ago, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, and she started this Cop Line. Tony, 365, 24 hours, 7 days a week. They have 100 retired police officers manning these phones, the number Skylar just gave out, for cops, not only that are suicidal or have suicide ideation, but have depression, anxiety, anything. They can call and speak confidentially, get the help they need. If they just want to talk to someone, that's
their families too.
Great.
Their families.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have people that really care out there. And now that kind of leads into my segue. When you're watching the news now, it's such a hotbed. These cops are involved in shootings. The media makes it what they want to make it to be. They leave out important facts.
Sure.
But I want to hear somebody else talk about it.
Well, you know, Mike. I mean, you and I spent a lot of years as police officers, and we've kind of always known that at any given moment somebody's going to second guess you. That went along with the job even back then. You know, you had 1 second to make a decision, and somebody else has the rest of their life to look at what you did wrong. So we've always lived with that kind of stress. I mean, now, though, I agree, you know, as far as the media is concerned, it's almost like, every time a police officer or a corrections officer or a law enforcement officer does something wrong, they're there pointing out every little thing that could have gone a different way. And I mean, it's just too bad. I somehow wish that there was just as much interest in all of the good things that we've seen police officers do,
right?
You know, things that don't get the press. So it's a tough profession. I don't know anybody that would want to do it now. And those that are in it now, they're really rethinking, their profession, because, you know, somewhere along the line, somebody has to, has to tell the other side of the story. And again, I mean, you know, I'm not defending police officers. You know, there are some police officers that make mistakes. There was a terrible mistake that was made just a couple of days ago. But, you know, it just seems to be that, you know, we're all now in a fishbowl, and anything that you do wrong is going to be amplified.
Well, I look at how race is thrown into, these shootings. And believe me, I can understand how people of color, once they are being supported by the media, and the media will focus on certain shootings, not all shootings. Good example, Michael Brown back in Ferguson, Missouri, Officer Wilson. Michael Brown was trying to get Officer Wilson's gun. I mean, what was he going to do with that guy? Crack walnuts? I don't think so. So Officer Wilson fights to retain his gun, gets it back. He's still being assaulted, and he ends up killing Michael Brown, who's a young black man. Unfortunately, he's also a thug, and he has a record, and he's trying to get the officer's gun. Listen, we're not trained to let people take our guns and say, oh, never mind. All right, you're stronger than me. You can have my gun. Please give me a break. But the media, as far as I believe, they have a way of pumping this up into something it's really not,
right?
And they spin it so it's going to make look what they want it to look like. And the result is cities are burning down. Cops are being hurt. Police Memorial Week's coming up in May. And I've, like yourself, I've been down to Police Memorial down in Washington, where there's been 120 cops killed in 1 year. Their families are there. It's horrific. It's the saddest, most humbling experience you'll ever see. And, you know, these are the same politicians and the same media that gives this very little notice. They give it very little coverage. We're talking hundreds of cops being killed a year, and they give it very little notoriety. And that, to me, it just turns my stomach.
And, you know, Mike, you know, there are times where things do not appear as they are. For example, let me give you an example. You know, I my career was in a very small town. We had 26 square miles to cover, and a lot of nights it was two or three cops. And so you would get called to a call, say like a barroom fight. And, you know, if a 6'6" guy grabs you by the throat and has you against the wall, and you're a police officer and you know your backup's 20 miles away, anybody that's ever been in that situation, you know, knows that, you know, that's a very dangerous situation, and things, you know, things can go bad very quickly. By the time somebody calls 911, they have completely lost control of the situation. That's why they call us. I have lost control. I don't know what to do. I got to call 911. So when we get there, we all already have the mentality that we have to take control of the situation. So you have some cops that will go in and say, hey, you shut up. Well, that doesn't look good to the general public, but it might, it may very well, you know, calm the situation down or at least control the situation from getting worse. So there are a lot of things that you see, that you don't grab in a 10-second video. There's a lot of things that happen that there's just so much other background to it. Do police officers make mistakes? Of course they do. Are we perfect? No, we're a microcosm of the community. There are good cops, there are bad cops, there are, we cover the whole spectrum.
Right. Well, I think it's important too, is, you know, when you see these shootings over and over again, I mean, obviously they're horrific, but when cops are shot, three cops killed in New York, all at once, two cops and one cruiser, one Asian, one Latino, and murdered for no reason, just executed. You know, right. The media gives it very little coverage. And that to me is just so disturbing. The city the size of New York. And I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're in a town of 15,000 people or you're in a city of 350,000 people. The same crimes can happen. Same scenarios can happen. And, you know, it's a very dangerous job to begin with. But when you have, and nowadays, no matter where you go, if there's an incident where there's a police presence, and there's some arguing between the community and the police, you know, several people have their phones out, they're videoing it. They want to be the next person to sell their video to whatever news network would buy it. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. Tony, what do you think of body cams? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that they're helpful, but also the technology is getting better. I was just reading an article about how, videos are not perfect either because they skip frames and it was like really technical where when you video something, the recorder almost like guesses what the next three frames will be just to speed up the thing. So you know, I think, video cams are good. They probably help more than hurt. But the bottom line is that you have to have an expert to be able to interpret the video. And you know, our attorneys are looking into all of that because I think, we're going to be judged by videos from here on out.
Absolutely. I think myself personally, we never wore body cams. I testified in court 300 times in 35 years. I think I'd be a pretty good person to be on the stand. I always told the truth, no matter if it was going to hurt. You know, when I raised my right hand to tell the truth, you know you're going to get the truth. I lost many cases, drunk driving, B&E's motor vehicle, because I told the truth. I wasn't going to lie. I didn't want that person sitting there looking at me up on the stand saying, that fucking cop is lying, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I had judges. I had a judge, Judge Flynn, actually compliment me for telling the truth on a drunk driving against a lawyer. Excuse me. And you know what? I just, from that day forward, I said, I'm never going to lie. And I just think if I was a chief of police, I would want my men and women to be as safe as possible. And I would definitely get together with the union and try to get them to agree to wear body cameras. The most professional, you know, well-made as there is, you know, I just think it only helps the cops, because society in general would never believe what cops go through, number one. And number two, within 2 or 3 years, every defense attorney would want to get rid of the body cams because they'd be losing so many cases.
For sure. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And the defense attorneys would find a way.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I have a question for you, Mike, Mr. Social Worker.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going through this major police reform issue up here in Massachusetts. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about having social workers join the team.
Right.
Now, I'm going to preface.
Ooh,
my
I like
remarks.
This.
I'm going to preface my remarks by saying that, you know, 90%, and I'm sure it was the same for you, Mike, 90% of the calls that I went on as a police officer had to do with drug addiction, alcoholism, or mental health. So I'm not really that turned off about having a social worker, at least somewhere in the mix. Now, I'm not saying have a social worker sit in a cruiser with you and drive around. That certainly would be way too dangerous. And that's what some people are saying.
Right.
But I don't think I'm against having a social worker stationed at the police station to review all of the cases, because 90% of the cases that I dealt with had to do with those three issues. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, well, I agree with you 100%. And I think you'll agree with me on this. I think most cops, first of all, after the Knapp Commission in New York did this study back in the Serpico days, if anybody's watching this or listening, Google Serpico, Google Knapp, K-N-A-P-P Commission. And basically what they found were, and the reason they had the Knapp Commission in New York, just real quick, cops were taking money. They were on the take. They weren't acting as police officers. They were just getting what they could out of society. Not all cops, but a lot of them in New York. So the Knapp Commission decided two things. One, cops were not educated. Let's get them educated. They'll be less apt to steal. And two, cops are not trained properly on how to deal with society's problems. So that education's going to help. I believe most cops I've ever worked with, There's a few that aren't, but I'd say 85% to 90%, 85% were somewhat of a social worker. Our jobs as police officers, you can't help it. It's an inherent job. You are a social worker. You got to solve disputes. You have to make decisions.
Resources.
If you should call child and family resources. So we are somewhat of social workers. So I think I would educate the police officers in social. I went to school for 4 years to become a social worker before I retired. And I learned a lot. But I'll tell you, I wasn't accepted in this very liberal environment. I was a white middle-aged cop that nobody liked. 4 years later, at graduation, we're all hugging and kissing and crying. We all loved each other because they saw my point of view. So do you agree that a lot of the calls we got were we acted as social workers?
Oh yeah. For sure. And you know, when I was working on my bachelor's, I also went to a school that had a lot of social work, and a lot of the courses that we took were in social whatever the word I'm looking for. So I think that is all part of the job. It's a big part of the job. I forget what they used to say, but it was like 80% compassion and 20% power and bronze.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
So
Well, and the social worker could be good for you guys too, because I mean, what makes you think there's no, the cops don't get depression? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that, I didn't realize, you know, there's two sides, and I think that you guys need your support too, and that's like why Cop Line's great. And but the social worker, I think that's great, because I think that it can open up a different perspective. I worked at Child Services here in Jersey. It's called DIFAS, DCPMP, and one of the social workers had said, she said, Skylar, we're first to the scene, just like a cop. And she said, we only get paid X, Y, and Z, but
right.
Social workers are almost there just like a cop.
Right. Sure. I think sending social workers into a heated situation would be very dangerous without police presence.
Yeah.
And I know as a fact from the city of Lowell, social workers would come at night to take children out of houses.
Oh, they same here, Mike. Yeah,
they wouldn't go alone. We'd go with them, you know?
Yeah, you
and
have
they felt
to.
Safer, you know? Yeah. And most social workers are women. I mean, not to be sexist, but I mean, I'm a social worker. I'm not a woman, obviously, but it's a female's profession in many ways. But I think police departments could really gain a lot of knowledge, and it would really help the cops themselves and their families, because cops inherently are more apt to commit suicide. The only other profession higher than police are corrections. That's the highest. They surpassed police in the 90s as far as the suicide rate. We're number two, police officer number two. So if you had somebody, if you had an education in social work, you would understand why you're feeling the way you're feeling, why suicide ideation is always running around in your mind, because, and you have a firearm on your side, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. Very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So true.
So, This went pretty good. One thing I wanted to mention that no one knows, very few people know, because I don't think you do it anymore. So, Skylar, Tony taught himself to play the guitar when he was about 15. And I'm not saying, like, he just strummed along. He really taught himself. He could play any Beatles song. I'll tell you, that, to me, I can't play with myself, never mind play an instrument.
I don't know about that, Mike. But
that's true. A lot of practice. But
It's funny that you mentioned that, Mike, because I really, and this is a true story, I just picked up the guitar again, probably within the last 2 weeks, and I noticed that there was a little dent on it. So I'm looking into getting it repaired, and it's just something that you get married, you have kids, all kinds of other things going on. Now I think I'm going to have a little more time for it.
That'd be great.
So I'm going back to it, actually.
Good stuff. Well,
that's
hobby. I know you smoke a cigar once in a while, so hopefully I'll see you up at Two Guys, and we can have a cigar. Tony, thanks so much for coming on the show today. The podcast. I'm sorry,
it was a pleasure.
Jersey Ed's great, but we had talked, and we'd love to have you on the Friends in Recovery podcast.
Sure. Yeah, that's a whole nother story.
That's a good story. And Skylar's going to be on that as well. So, Skylar, I think it's about time to wrap it up.
This is great.
It has been a great, great podcast as usual. I want to thank FirstNet, built by AT&T, our sponsor, because they give us this opportunity. And they are so instrumental in this day and age to police, fire, corrections, veterans. They're just, Google FirstNet and read about them. And a lot of police departments are going to FirstNet and fire departments. And I think it's great. And Tony Yachinski, I want to thank you so much for coming on Friends of Recovery, answering the call.
And, thank you so much for having me. Skylar, nice to meet you.
You too.
Hey, everybody, answering the call, the First Responders Podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. Stay safe, everyone.
That concludes this episode of Answering the Call, the First Responders Podcast. Thanks to Genesis House, FirstNet, built with AT&T, for supporting those on the path to recovery and keeping this valuable resource free for all our friends in recovery. Follow us on Facebook for past shows and updates, and enjoy free access to twice daily support meetings. Brought to you by Genesis House and the Friends in Recovery. If you can't get enough of Mike, the Podfather, Jersey Ed, and Skylar, you can catch them on Friends in Recovery, the Addiction Recovery Podcast. Available on Facebook, Podbean, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and GenesisHouse.net.